You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
We've talked a lot on this show about why it's best to eat fresh, locally grown produce, tomatoes from the metropolitan area as opposed to the ones shipped in from California. But you cannot get more local than Novella Carpenter's Ghost Town Farm, which she created on an abandoned lot just a few blocks from downtown Oakland, California. In her book, Farm City, The Education of an Urban Farmer, she tells the story of her farm and the cast of locals who've sustained it, and I'm very pleased to welcome her to our show today. Hello.
Great to be here.
You've studied under Michael Pollan at UC Berkeley's Graduate School of Journalism, and your writing has appeared in Saveur, among other publications. What came first, the writing or the farm?
Well, definitely the writing. I actually started off as a fiction writer in Seattle, sort of a tortured novelist. But I found that as I was urban farming, I felt like I really wanted to explore those things in essay form and kind of unpack them and really think about it. So I started doing personal essays for Salon.com. And things about raising animals. The first essay was about raising a Thanksgiving turkey.
You're originally from Idaho. Mm-hmm. So now Idaho has big cities. Were you from the city or a farm area?
No, from a farm area. It's funny because my parents lived in the Bay Area, and then this is in the early 70s. They decided to go back to the land, so they bought property in Idaho. I'm like, Mom, why couldn't you have bought property in Napa, you know? So they moved to Idaho, started farm, you know, homesteading basically, even though they had no skills whatsoever.
And is that what got you thinking about it when you were in Oakland? You'd been in Seattle. Could you have pulled this off in Seattle?
Yeah, and I did, actually. In Seattle, I had chickens and bees, and I had plowed up the parking strip and planted vegetables, much to my neighbor's horror. It was definitely something I was doing in Seattle.
But in Oakland, was it important for you to do it in a not-so-nice part of a very big city?
Well, for Oakland, you know, the Bay Area actually has some really, it's expensive there. And Oakland has its own Tony neighborhoods, very high-end. And the neighborhood that I chose, partially because the neighborhood is called Ghost Town. It's kind of a forlorn place. It's been kind of abandoned. There are many empty buildings and houses that are shuttered. And so one of the things that I noticed when I moved into the apartment that we live next to now is that there was an abandoned lot. So I began squat gardening on it. So I just sort of took it over, grew vegetables, and now it's a huge garden with rabbits and chickens. But
this is a rather diverse neighborhood. Alana, your neighbor ran a kind of speakeasy out of her house, mm-hmm. which closed at 3 a.m., just when the Buddhist monks living next door begin their morning prayers. Other folks were living out of their cars. They filled shopping carts with cans and scrap metal. There were drug dealers, gunfights, plenty of odd noises late at night.
Mm-hmm.
Not
mm-hmm.
the ideal place for a farm.
I know. One wouldn't think so.
I would have thought Berkeley across
But
wherever.
Berkeley, again, is very expensive. It's very exclusive. And also people are more prone to be picky. So, like, let's say my rooster crows at 4 a.m. In Berkeley, I'm going to get a phone call from the police are going to come visit me, okay? But in Oakland, if there's not gunfire, if no one was murdered, they're not coming. You know, like, there can be gunfire and no one shows up.
Have your neighbors been responsive from the start?
My neighbors at first were, my neighbors are mostly from different countries. And many of those countries, places like Yemen, Vietnam, Somalia, they actually have this really intense urban agriculture system in place already. So for them, when I have, you know, chickens in my backyard, it's no big deal. It's like home. And so it didn't confuse people. And, you know, my landlord is from Benin. He's from Africa. And so I have these goats now. And he doesn't even ask me about it. You know, it's just sort of like, oh, yeah, some goats.
I'm sure people are more even aware of the billboard overhead that warns about sexual predators. But what about the soil? I would mm-hmm. think that an abandoned lot and all the stuff that was mm-hmm. thrown onto it would be not the best place to grow produce.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's definitely the first thing that people should do when they are thinking about squatting in an abandoned lot is to get the soil tested. So it's the first thing that I did. And once it actually had very low lead and heavy metal content. And so I planted there without fear. But, you know, the other thing I did is I planted raised beds as well. And that's something that a lot of people do in places that are prone to lead.
Mm-hmm. And you started squatting, you said. So when did you make an arrangement with the owner of the land to actually put a farm on it?
Well, there's no arrangement. Everything's very ad hoc in Oakland, in my neighborhood especially. So the owner showed up when the garden had gotten fairly off to a good start. And he was he's Chinese. He doesn't really speak English. And so we had a few words pantomiming, and he said the word condominiums. And so I was like, okay, condos.
And so he was thinking of building condos.
Yes, there? that was his dream. But he had a hard time getting the permits to do it because it's kind of insane to build condos where I live. There's a huge brick building abandoned right across the street from the lot. You know, there's gunfire, there's prostitutes. It's kind of not something people want to fund. And the book was written during the main economic, like, boom, really. The housing boom was amazing. Everybody in Oakland's house was worth $1 million. The action of the book ends, it's actually when the housing bubble happened. I mean, it popped. And so building on that lot is pretty much out of the question at this point.
Well, now that there's a book, I'm sure that he'd be really embarrassed if he tried to get rid of you. But raising animals in the city is another issue. Mm-hmm. And some cities actually have ordinances against it.
Yeah, they do. They definitely do. It depends on what city you live in. Many people fight to get the right to raise chickens, especially. There's a whole, like, you know, backyard chicken group that goes after people to make it okay.
You began raising bees. New York has an ordinance against raising bees, although there are people who do it anyway.
I've heard that. I've heard on rooftops venomous insects are illegal. But I think that people may be able to convince people that to turn that over. You know, it's just going to a city council meeting and turning it over.
And you got help when your boyfriend gave you some beekeeping supplies, and then you mail ordered bees?
Mm-hmm.
They come
mm-hmm.
in the mail?
Yeah, I mean, you can order them in New York, I'm sure. It comes through the mail. The post office called me. They were very upset because it's not something – I think the mail –
something buzzing that you ordered.
Well, it wasn't even that because, you know, you can order chicks through the mail too, which I have done. But it was that the bees were actually attracting other bees. So they put the bees outside and it was like I showed up to pick up this box. It's basically a shoe box with a wire, you know, thing around it. And there were just all these local bees, like, hanging out, trying to figure out. They smelled the queen, you know, so they mm-hmm. were excited about her. So,
my guest is Novella Carpenter, who's written a book called Farm City, The Education of an Urban Farmer. It's published by the Penguin Press. When did you decide to expand to other animals?
Well, it was it was one of those things when you live in the Bay Area, when you start to live in the Bay Area for long enough, you start wondering about meat eating. You know, Michael Pollan's there, Alice Waters is there, and they are great advocates of eating locally raised, you know, humanely raised meat. However, it's extremely expensive. And, you know, I would go to these farmers markets and I would just be bummed that I couldn't afford the $17 steak. And so one of the things I thought about doing was to try to raise my own meat animals. So I started off with a turkey. I'd figured epic Thanksgiving sort of bird. And then it sort of spiraled from there. So I got rabbits and then pigs.
Well, turkeys are easy because I'm told they're really stupid. And so they don't take a lot of tending. You just feed them and they get fat and then you eat them some point. But no?
Not really. I raised heritage breed turkeys. And you know how Ben Franklin thought that turkey should have been the American bird? Well, he's right. Because they're very curious. They want to go explore all over the place. So my turkeys were really adventurers.
Now, you seem to have developed some kind of a connection to your animals. Isn't it difficult after you've raised an animal, in the case of pigs, raising them to how big, 300 pounds?
Around 300, yeah.
And I understand pigs are among the most lovable animals in the world, make great pets. Then you have to kill them.
Yeah, it's true. Well, it's part of, you know, if you are a meat eater, it's one of the things that I think that people should examine. You know, could they kill this animal? In the case of the pigs, the Wilbur character, you know, from Charlotte's Web is in our minds often.
You give them names.
I give them names. However, I feel like with my pigs in particular, They lived on our farm for 6 months, and they ate so much food that we fed all the pigs on dumpster scraps.
You went into one of the fanciest restaurants in the area.
Of course I
did.
Those
pigs ate well.
They ate probably better than I did. But the whole thing is that was a lot of work. And so once the pigs had reached a certain size, I felt like either they were going to eat me or I was going to eat them. And so it just made sense.
You were caught dumpster diving at Ecola, this very famous...
Mm-hmm. Ecolo, yeah.
Ecolo, is
mm-hmm,
it?
Mm-hmm.
I've never been, but I've read about it.
Mm-hmm.
And were they happy that you were dumpster diving for pigs?
Well, at first they were disturbed by me rifling around their dumpster. But they always, when I explained to them it was for my pigs, then they became more amused.
And they wound up giving you a launch party and used your pigs as one of the ingredients?
Yeah. The chef there, Chris Lee, befriended me and actually showed me. We did a salumi internship, so I learned how to make all of the things from the pig.
Now, nowadays, the people who visit your farm couldn't be more diverse. You get neighborhood children in there and teach them how to raise rabbits.
Mm-hmm.
But also, this area, as you point out, had some pretty shady characters. Have they gotten involved in the farm as well?
Most of the people who... It's funny because I always think of, you think of drug dealers and they're just evil or something. But I actually am like, I kind of like the local drug dealers, They're just trying to make a living just like all of us. And all of us are kind of doing something illegal. Me having pigs in the backyard, probably illegal. So, but they get involved in terms of, like, people come and harvest produce, and that's great.
And what happens to the produce? Are you selling this stuff?
No, I mean, for the most part, I do. I grow food for the neighborhood because the neighborhood is very food insecure. They don't have access to fresh produce. And so I'm more than willing to share the bounty. It's a huge garden. It is squatted after all. And I do sell occasionally to underground restaurants.
Mm-hmm. And you give to food programs.
Yeah, there was a Black Panthers literacy program that I would deliver salad to.
Have you heard from any readers who have been influenced by your book?
Yeah, it's
and
so...
by your writing in Slate.
In Salon.
Yeah,
people.
Sorry.
No, it's okay. I get these amazing emails from people from all over the country, from Tennessee and Kansas City and Chicago and Portland, and they are all inspired. Many of them have chickens, and then that's why they got the book. They're sort of interested, and then they realize there are so many possibilities, and I think it does inspire people.
Well, we've seen some urban farms develop in New York, in Brooklyn especially.
Yeah.
Some of them are supplying restaurants,
I know.
For example.
Mm-hmm.
But this is a chancy thing. Your landlord could at some point just simply evict you, and the next thing you know, in fact, you could help gentrify the neighborhood to the point where somebody would feel that it's a good idea to put a building up there.
I know. It's so funny. People accuse me of gentrifying. I'm like, were you there when the pigs were here? Because it smelled bad.
And what do you do about that? Because pigs are blamed for polluting large sections of the South where there are many pig farms.
Well, when it's small scale, it's totally different. You don't have these hog lagoons filled with, rotting pig stuff. So I definitely was – I just used it as fertilizer in my garden.
Who's minding the farm now?
My boyfriend's watching everybody, but I call him every night and make sure. Like, I woke up in the middle of the night and called him and was like, are you watering the rabbits? So, yeah.
A book tour could be dangerous.
It is. It's horrible.
And what advice would you give to people who are thinking about starting their own urban farms?
Well, what I always tell people is to start really slowly. Start doing vegetables if that's your motive. Grow stuff that you really like to eat. And then if you want to move on to farm animals, just start with one farm animal per year, so try chickens. And then if you like that, rabbits, and et cetera.
And you were taught, you said salumeria?
What's that?
What is it called?
Oh, the art of making salumi, yeah.
Salumi.
Mm-hmm.
Are you doing that as well? On top of tending all of these different things, are you now... making sausage and salamis and stuff?
Well, really the salami was for the pigs. So the pigs, when we harvested them, that was a way to save their meat, for long periods of time. In fact, I brought prosciutto to the event that had been hanging in the kitchen of Ecolo for 18 months. So it's a long-term project.
Since you are a prolific blogger as well, What do you think of yourself as first, as an urban farmer or as a writer?
Definitely a writer. I'm working on another project that's not so much about me farming. So more like a writer.
Well, you said your earlier desire was to write fiction. Mm. You ever go back to that?
I might. You never know. I always feel like people who write fiction should be a little bit older.
Well, in your case, you have a really interesting story to tell and one that might inspire some people. Do you think that if your parents had known what you know, they wouldn't have gone to Idaho?
God, that's a good question. I think they would have done it anyway. There was, you know, people were feeling, you know, the city had really turned into a place that people didn't want to live. So I think they would have tried it anyway.
And where are they now?
My dad is still kind of a mountain man in Idaho. My mom lives in Washington State, and she teaches at an Indian reservation.
And your father, is he growing potatoes?
He's not. He's more like a hunter-gatherer type.
Novella Carpenter has written for Salon.com, Saveur.com, SFGate.com, which is a San Francisco Chronicles website, Mother Jones. And her book is called Farm City, The Education of an Urban Farmer. It's published by the Penguin Press. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you so much.